Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. We begin our program with news of an attack by a suicide bomber Tuesday in Turkey. At least 10 people are dead. Christopher Jones Cruz has more.
An explosion in the historic square of Sultanahmet in Istanbul, Turkey, left at least 10 people dead and wounded 15 others Tuesday. Ali Hakan Ataman told VOA, "We heard a really big explosion. I didn't really understand what was happening. Blood and flesh were splattered on us, and I am sure I saw at least 6 or 7 people laying on the ground dead. I'm still in shock." Officials said they suspect a Syrian suicide bomber detonated the explosion. They said they believe the suicide bomber had ties to the Islamic State terrorist group. The Turkish government has been attacked by Islamist and Kurdish militants in the past few months. The Sultanahmet attack took place while government security forces cracked down on the Kurdish rebel group, the PKK. Another witness, Erdogan Salili, said the explosion was huge. All the buildings around were shaking, and it was very strong and threw people off the ground, he said. There was panic and fear. All was quiet for a second, or a bit longer. I've never seen an explosion of this magnitude. As people were trying to figure out what happened, the cries of people at the scene was very tragic. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. A lottery is a way of raising money in which many tickets are sold and a few of the tickets are chosen by chance to win prizes. Dan Friedel tells us how one or more people in the United States may receive the largest lottery prize in American history.
If you are lucky enough to win America's Powerball lottery jackpot Wednesday night, you could take home all or part of an estimated $1.3 billion. You can play the lottery in all but 6 U.S. states. The game of chance could forever change the life of the winner or winners. Whatever the final jackpot is, the federal government will get its share of the money, 25% in taxes. Then, depending on where you live, the state government could take another 8%. But still, a single Powerball winner could have close to $800 million to spend as he or she wishes. Until now, the largest U.S. lottery prize ever offered, $656 million, was paid out in a Mega Millions game in 2012. The chances of winning the Powerball game are 1 in 292 million. A player chooses, or has the computer choose, 5 numbers from 1 through 69. Then the 6th number is a Powerball from 1 through 26. What do lottery winners do with their money? And how does the government use the money raised from ticket sales? A website called 538.com wrote about how the money is divided. The first point is fairly easy. Most of the money raised from ticket sales goes to the prize pool. How else can you create a jackpot of over $1 billion? But after that, the website says it is not clear how Powerball and other lotteries affect individual states. The story is based on a study of money spent on lotteries in 43 states in 2012. The total was almost $60 billion. The largest part of the pie goes to funding the prize pool. It eats up about two-thirds. After that, about 5% goes to the administrative costs of organizing the lottery in each state. That leaves just under 30% for each state to use as it wants. However, 538 says that is where the transparency ends. Most states do not specifically report on how that money is divided. ABC News examined the effects of a big Powerball jackpot from 2001. It found that while some states put the money in a general fund, other states use the money for environmental protection, schools, or parks and recreation. However, many experts believe that when states begin to receive lottery money, state officials factor that into the government spending. That can have a bad effect on other spending. Patrick Pierce is a political science professor at St. Mary's College in Indiana. He says if a state joins the lottery and claims the money will be used for education projects, it only makes a difference for 1 year. After that, the state begins to count on the lottery money and it reduces education spending. Given a few years, he says, a state would have spent more on education without a lottery. States do use lottery money for some government projects, but what about individual winners? A few years ago, Forbes wrote a story about 11 lottery winners and what they said they would do with their winnings. The most popular answers included financing college for their children, buying homes, paying off loans, setting up a financial plan or trust for family members, going fishing, and going to school. Here's what happened to some other lottery winners, according to a study from the website PopSugar.com. First, the good stories. One married couple from Canada won $11.2 million and gave most of it away to charitable groups after making gifts to family members. A school teacher won $111 million in a Powerball game over 20 years ago. He started a summer camp for children. A couple from Scotland won about $250 million 5 years ago. They set up a financial program and made gifts to artists, sick children, neighbors in need, and other causes in their community. Now, the not-so-good examples. A couple in England won a prize worth almost $3 million. They bought a new home, some luxury cars, went on trips, and spent more money. Arguments and bad investments led to debt and a breakup. One woman in New Jersey won big prizes in both 1985 and 1986. She took home over $5 million, but she lost it all at Atlantic City casinos. other lottery winners burned through their winnings by spending big, avoiding taxes, and suffering the punishment, and giving away more money than they had. I'm Dan Friedel.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Americans can eat eggs without feeling guilty, according to new nutritional guidelines issued by the U.S. government. A person can eat as many eggs as they like each day, the updated guidelines say. One large chicken egg has about 186 milligrams of cholesterol, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Most of that is in the yellow center, or the yolk. Older guidelines restricted cholesterol intake to 300 milligrams a day. Two eggs would be more than the daily limit. The guidelines were issued by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health and Human Services. The government guidelines are issued every 5 years. It is designed to help set nutritional standards for school lunch programs and federal food aid. The new guidelines cautioned that individuals should eat as little dietary cholesterol as possible. In the past, guidelines have led to reduced sales and hurt agricultural markets. In 1977, the guidelines recommended avoiding cholesterol. That recommendation led to a decline in egg sales. Other tips to stay healthy included advice to limit intake of sugars to 10%. Saturated fat calories found in red meat, butter, cheese, whole milk, and ice cream should be limited each day to 10%. The guidelines also suggested Americans move away from a diet full of animal protein and sodium. The guidelines promoted eating more fruits, vegetables, and nuts. The government has long recommended eating breakfast each day as a way to stay fit. The latest guidelines do not recommend that breakfast is necessary. Some are critical of the new guidelines. Mayo Clinic's Dr. Donald Hensrud told Time magazine that the new recommendations do not address weight management. Hensrud also mentioned that the recommendations failed to note the positive reports of how coffee decreases the risks of diabetes and Parkinson's disease. Harvard professor and physician Walter Willett was candid in his observations. This is a loss for the American public and a win for big beef and big soda, Willett said. The problem isn't just that the public gets misleading, censored information, but that these guidelines get translated into national food programs. This then gets directly translated into unnecessary premature deaths, diabetes, and suffering. Of course, this goes on to mean greater health care costs for all. It is all connected. I'm Anna Mateo.
Thank you. Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the 1890s, the American people were deeply divided over the nation's money system. Should the United States support its currency with gold or with gold and silver? The question became the main issue in the presidential election of 1896. This week in our series, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell the story of that election.
Many Americans wanted a gold standard. They said the United States should support its money only with gold. A gold standard, they said, would keep the value of the dollar high. These people were called gold bugs. Most were businessmen, bankers, and investors. Many other Americans wanted the United States to support its money with both gold and silver. They thought the value of the dollar was too high. A high dollar, they said, drove down prices for agricultural products. A silver standard would lower the value of the dollar. These people were called silverites. Most were farmers, laborers, and owners of small businesses.
The debate over gold and silver was especially important because of an economic depression that began in the United States in 1893. Thousands of banks and businesses closed. Millions of men lost their jobs. Foreign investors withdrew their money from America. Americans who had money were afraid to invest it. Many people believed the Depression would end if the government issued more paper money backed by silver. President Grover Cleveland disagreed, and he opposed any legislation that might threaten the gold standard. He noted that every major nation supported its paper money with gold. The United States would be foolish, he said, not to do the same. It could not stand apart from the world's other money systems.
President Cleveland belonged to the Democratic Party. By 1896, many Democrats had become silverites. They gained control of party organizations in several western and southern states. They called Cleveland a traitor to his party and to the American people. They did not want him to be the party's candidate in that year's election. The Republican Party also was divided over the issue of gold and silver. Some members from silver mining states in the West left the party. Others remained in the party but gave support secretly to silverite Democrats. Republicans had done well in the congressional elections of 1894. They won control of both the Senate and House of Representatives. Party leaders were sure a Republican could be elected president in 1896. The most likely candidate appeared to be Governor William McKinley of Ohio.
McKinley was, in fact, nominated on the first ballot at the Republican Convention in St. Louis, Missouri. The Democratic Party held its nominating convention in Chicago, Illinois. The most likely candidate was Congressman Richard Bland of Missouri. A majority of convention delegates, however, were silverites, and they expected to nominate a silverite candidate. Supporters of President Cleveland wanted to test the silverites' strength. They demanded a debate on the gold-silver issue. Several men spoke in support of President Cleveland and the gold standard. Several spoke in support of silver. The last to speak was Congressman William Jennings Bryan of Nebraska. He had led an unsuccessful fight in Congress to keep America using silver.
Bryan spoke emotionally during the convention debate. He said he represented America's farmers, laborers, and small businessmen who wanted a silver standard. Bryan ended his speech with a line that became famous during the campaign. It called to mind the torture and death of Jesus Christ. Bryan said gold supporters could not force their money system on silver supporters. "You shall not," he said, "crucify mankind upon a cross of gold." With those words, William Jennings Bryan won the nomination away from Congressman Bland. He would be the Democrats' presidential candidate. He was just 36 years old.
A number of Democrats refused to accept Bryan as their candidate. They withdrew from the Chicago convention and held one of their own. They called themselves National Democrats. They nominated candidates for president and vice president, but they did not win many votes in the election. America's third party at that time, the People's Party, had a difficult decision to make. Populists, as they were called, agreed with silverite Democrats that the United States should have a silver standard. So some believed the party should unite with the Democrats to support Democratic candidate William Jennings Bryan. If they did not, Republican William McKinley was sure to win the election. Other populists feared that such a union would mean the end of the People's Party. The populists solved the problem at their nominating convention. Like the Democrats, they chose Bryan to be their candidate for president. But they chose a different candidate for vice president. In this way, William Jennings Bryan was able to run for president at the head of two separate political parties.
There was a great difference in the way the two presidential candidates campaigned. William McKinley refused to travel. Instead of going to the voters, he let the voters come to him, and they did. Railroad companies supported McKinley. They ran special trains to his home in Ohio. The trip was free. Each trip was the same. A band met the train and marched with the group to McKinley's home. McKinley came outside to hear a statement of support from the leader of the group. Then he made a short speech and shook hands. The group left, and another one came. On one day of the campaign, McKinley met 30 groups this way. That was more than 80,000 people.
While McKinley stayed at home, William Jennings Bryan traveled. He visited 27 states and spoke to 5 million people. Bryan explained that he had to travel because the Democratic Party did not have enough money to campaign in other ways. Bryan spent $650,000 on his campaign, McKinley spent $3.5 million. Bryan's main campaign idea was that the gold standard would ruin America's economy. McKinley's main campaign idea was that silver money would ruin the economy. For a time, Bryan's campaign seemed to be succeeding. More and more people promised to support him. Then, in the final weeks before Election Day, the situation began to change. The depressed economy showed signs of improving. The price of wheat rose for the first time in several years. Perhaps, people said, it was wrong to blame gold for the Depression. Perhaps, they said, the ideas of William Jennings Bryan were wrong.
On Election Day, it was soon clear who had won. McKinley received 270 electoral votes. Bryan received 176. Bryan congratulated McKinley. Then he told his supporters to begin getting ready for the next presidential election. "If we are right about silver," Bryan said, "we will win 4 years from now."
McKinley's election seemed to give new life to the American economy. Within a month, a business publication reported that buying and selling had increased greatly. It said demand for goods had led to the reopening of factories closed during the Depression. At the same time, new supplies of gold were discovered in Alaska, Australia, and South Africa. The extra gold increased the supply of money in the same way silver would have increased it. Taxes on imported goods rose to almost 60%. Under this protective tariff, American industry grew fast. The Depression ended.
The economic depression of the 1890s forced Americans to worry first about developments at home. But there were a number of international developments then which involved the United States. That will be our story next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and images at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English. Thank you.